the Upper Santee Fair Valley Municipal Water District. If I could have Mr. Jan Rigi lead us in the pledge of allegiance.
Our flag is bright and colorful, brilliant and courage, and firm faith to lead us at our sense of pledge. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Mr. Chadwick, can I take roll call, please?
Yes, we are missing Director Chavez and Director Robinson.
Do I have a motion to adopt the agenda?
I move.
Second.
Seeing all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Seeing no objections, so move. Public comment, we do have Mr. Royal Brown. I'm going to go ahead and limit it to 3 minutes if you'd like to come up and speak.
Attention toward the report by Sketches Engineering today that concerning about the background situation of the groundwater in this basin. The amount of volatiles, amount of photo-resolved salts, and the various constituents that have gone into our groundwater, and where are we in relationship to a total cleanup? And how long does it project out for the continuation of the necessity of doing cleanup of the groundwater here in the San Gabriel Valley? So that's basically I'm looking for answers as to what is the future of groundwater cleanup in this area, especially about the historical problems of both dissolved solids, involved organic compounds, nitrates, all those things are ongoing problems for the public in this area.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Brown. Anyone else wishing to speak? See no interest, and we'll go ahead and close public comment. Do you have a motion? Sorry about that. Director Pacheco.
Good morning, everyone. I'd just like to, on behalf of
anyone else wishing to speak? Seeing no interest, go ahead and close public comment. Do I have a motion to approve the minutes?
So moved.
Do I have a second? All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Seeing no objections, tonight's on general fund account.
Yes, Mr. Morales, we have a total amount of general fund of just over $35,000. The majority of that, just over $24,000, is for the revolving fund account.
Do I have a motion to approve?
So moved.
Second?
Second.
All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Seeing no objections. Action items, update regarding basin water quality.
Yeah, as a suggestion of Director Robinson, this item fits well in informing this board about issues that lend themselves to the development of Upper District Integrated Resources Plan. Your board has been learning about Metropolitan Water District's Integrated Resources Plan by an excellent presentation by Benjamin Fidek, the Planning and Resources Manager for Metropolitan. Another workshop by Mr. Steve Arakawa from Metropolitan on the Bay Delta. A workshop to follow in April on the Colorado River issues. It was important, and I think Director Robinson's point was right on at the last meeting, to bring forward an overall assessment and update from the San Gabriel, Main San Gabriel Basin Water Quality Authority and the Water Master. Mr. Ken Manning is here today, Executive Director from the Water Quality Authority, and Mr. Tony Campiello, the Water Master. And so Steve Johnson and Mr. Manning and Mr. Campiello are going to walk us through this presentation today, and this gives the board a solid basis on update review of water quality in the Main San Gabriel Basin. And that's integral to making decisions about a preferred resource mix for future.
So with that, I'll turn it over to Steve and he'll start. Yeah. Thank you, Mr. President, and thank you to the board. Welcome, everybody. We're going to try and do this as you know, when I go through things, sometimes it takes a while. And I apologize for that. When we put this together, it ended up being over 50 slides, so we're going to try and move through it. There are handouts in the back. So on some of the details for the slides, if you want to look at the detail, maybe later we can ask questions, we can respond to questions later, rather than go through all of the detail, because there's details in there about the types of contamination on each of the operable units and things like that, that obviously it's going to take a long time to go through today. Both Ken and I have a meeting downtown at 10, so we're going to try and get through this thing by maybe 9, a little after 9, so we can still make 10 o'clock. One other thing I wanted to do is obviously give some recognition to your general manager for putting this together. This was Shane's idea to put this together, and we ran the, and obviously Director Robinson, and ran the PowerPoint through Shane to get this thing pulled together. Before I start anything, maybe Ken would like to say, you want to say a couple words about the WQA and the role of the schools? Because I'm going to go through the slides, but I want to make sure Ken, and what we're going to do is I go through some of the operable units, some of the ones that Ken's more involved in, we'll stop, and Ken could add some comments to each of the operable units as we go.
Thank you, on behalf of the Water Quality Authority, thank you for inviting us here this morning to kind of fill you in on something that I think is really important. The Water Quality Authority, I've been back with the agency now for just about a few days over a year, and we've had a chance to update the board and bring the board forward on a number of issues, and I see that we've put together a fairly extensive presentation here, so I think as he goes through his presentation, if I see some things that need to be added, I'll go through and do that. But I think it's fair to say that if you look at the progression from the beginning in 1992 when this agency was involved with the JPA and then eventually into the state agency board, the Water Quality Board has made significant progress. And just to kind of start you off with where I think you need to end in terms of where our progress is, we have treated over 1 million acre feet of water in this basin through the 30 different projects that we have operating here in this basin. That's just a tremendous amount of water. The other thing that I think is important is that we've pulled out over 120,000 pounds of contaminants out of the ground and have treated that water. So it's been a significant change. But that's all the good news. The bad news is based on our, you know, loose, very difficult assessment of where we are in progress, we'd say we're maybe only 45% to 50% of the way done with getting this work complete. So we've got a lot of work to do. It's going to take decades to get it complete. And with that, I'm going to wait and see if you have any questions at the end. Steve's got a sketchy presentation on each one of the operable units, and then we'll fill in the blank.
Okay, here we go. And we've got Tony here because Tony represents the Water Master. And obviously, Water Master is involved in all of the operable units, as is WQA, and some of the other issues that we've got in the basins that aren't necessarily a part of an operable unit. So as we go along, Tony may need to jump in and speak up also. And as I said, there's a handout. You can follow along on the handout. There's really two approaches we're going to do today. One is an overview of US EPA Superfund operable units. That's up there at the top. Okay, we're going to do that first, and that's the main bulk of these PowerPoint slides, is the operable unit slides. Then we're also going to close with other water quality issues, just some of the other things that aren't directly related to operable units that we just want to make you aware of, that the WQA, the Water Master, the agencies, the water producers in the basin are having to deal with. In the operable units, this is sort of the overview. There are six operable units listed right there: Baldwin Park operable unit, the South El Monte, Whittier Narrows, Plenty Valley, and then Area 3, which we've got in parentheses there at Alhambra. Just for your information, as we refer to the last one, operable unit Area 3, EPA set it up as operable unit, Area 3 operable unit, primarily because as some of you have been around to watch this happen, there tend to be a little bit of a stigma associated with being designated as an operable unit. For example, the Baldwin Park operable unit, people at Baldwin Park don't like to have their name attached to an operable unit for groundwater contamination. So Alhambra requested EPA just label it Area 3 and keep their name out of it. However, as we go through it, so people know where it is, we always say it's in Alhambra. So I'm not sure how much good it does, but it is not called the Alhambra operable unit. It's Area 3. So those are the operable units. Since you have a handout, you can always refer back to this so you know what we're talking about. But we do show a little diagram for each operable unit as we go. As you can see, the biggest operable unit of the basin, the largest with the most contamination, the highest cost to fix, the highest cost to clean up, is the Baldwin Park operable unit. That's shown up here in the yellow. Okay. Plenty Valley Aquifer Unit. Actually, the groundwater flows through Plenty Valley, and Plenty Basin up into the main basin like this, and then down through Woodyard Narrows. It does one of these. But that's the Plenty Valley Aquifer Unit. You've got El Monte and South El Monte here, and then just below El Monte and South El Monte, you've got Woodyard Narrows. We are sitting about, we're about right over here right now, right above, just off the 210 freeway up in this area. River flows right along here, so as you know, okay. And then we've got Area 3 over in this area. So this is the boundary of the San Gabriel Basin. And this is giving you a sense of where all of the operable units are located in the basin. I should mention, these heavy blue lines, those delineate the boundaries. I've shown the yellow areas are sort of they're a characterization of the extent of the groundwater contamination plume. So that's what the yellow area is. But the designated boundary of the operable unit is the heavy blue line. And you can see they do connect each other. And then you see Woodyard Narrows down below, and then you've got South El Monte in here. One quick mention about the Woodyard Narrows operable unit. Because Woodyard Narrows is right, as it is in the Narrows, it's a Narrows right before it goes into Central Basin, EPA determined that it was very, very difficult, if not impossible, to try and identify responsible parties for that contamination in this area, since it's basically where all the water of the basin flows out of the basin through Woodyard Narrows. So to try and find who the responsible parties are for contamination in this area, very, very difficult. So Woodyard Narrows identified the Woodyard Narrows operable unit early on as an EPA fund lead project. That means that they were not going to make a big expenditure, a big attempt to find responsible parties. They're going to use EPA money to come in resolve the issues at the Woodyard Narrows. One of the other things that does also is, after a certain amount of time, which I believe is 10 years of operation.
It's actually May of 2013
when DTSC takes over. EPA, when they do a fund lead, after 10 years of operation, they're required by the Superfund law to turn the project over to the state, which is good and bad, because that takes federal funds away, and that puts it on the DTSC to pay the money for the operation. So DTSC is looking at this project right now as to whether it's effective or not, because they certainly don't want to take over a project that's not effective. So anyway, you can refer back to this as we go on the location of each of these operable units. This is sort of a matrix showing the types of contaminants across the top for each of the operable units that we're dealing with. You've got TCE, PCE, carbon tet, 1, 2, 3 DCE, all of them all the way down to nitrates at the end. Chrome 6 over here, which really we're not dealing much with, at least in this basin for the operable units. And you've got your perchlorate in here, your rocket fuel, NDMA, which is your liquid rocket fuel and your solid rocket fuels in there. So you can see that we've identified all the contaminants for each of the operable units, which they're also identified in the summaries, but this is a matrix, so it's easy reps to go back to. Ballpark operable unit, it underlies most of the Azusa area, Irwindale, Ballpark area. Primary contaminants, which are on the which are clearly shown on the matrix, being TCE, PCE, 1, 2, 3 TCP, which is actually one of our difficult ones here, 1, 2, 3 TCP, one of the volatiles. So here we identify the contaminants. Again, it's on the matrix, what we provided here. This is taken off the bigger map. This shows you the area. This also shows you the projects in the Boulder Park operable unit and the water agencies that are operating those projects. They're shown in the boxes here, Valley County Water Districts, with the capacity. These are design capacities for the treatment facilities. That's Valley County right here. We've got the San Gabriel Valley Water Company, Mr. Riggi's company over here, owner Dan Riggi. San Gabriel Valley Water Company, B6 right here. Loch Lenny Valley County Water District right here. This is 7,000 GPM, 7,800 GPM, I believe, up there. San Gabriel Valley has another plant down here, the B5 plant, which is part of the operable unit. We also have, and a lot of you know, Jim Byram, Cal Domestic Water Company. Their facility is down here. As you can see, it's shown outside the operable unit. This project is not directly attached to the operable unit as part of the remedy. However, by the time the remedy was put in place, the contamination, as you can see, it moved outside the designated operable unit and affected their wells. So Cal Domestic was successful to get the responsible parties. They're called cooperating respondents at Dolmar. to get the cooperating respondents to fund his cleanup there. So he has a treatment facility down here also. So those are the primary treatment facilities in the ballpark operable unit. I'll give you a little bit more detail on those.
Questions.
Sure.
It was said that the basin is roughly 50% cleaned up, but I wonder how that translates into these six areas. Are there some areas that are better than 75%, 80% almost cleaned up? Can we say that, or are they all equally about 50%?
Well, this BPOU operable unit has been in place the longest.
I was thinking of the map with the six blotches.
Right, but this, I was just going to point out, though, that this operable unit here has been in place the longest, which means it's had the treatment facility operating the longest. The original project was signed up with EPA, and the responsible parties, the cooperating respondents, was signed up for a 15-year agreement. In other words, they're on the hook for 15 years of capital and O&M costs for this project.
So some areas of the basins are almost clean.
So my point of that is that we are coming up on the 15 years in 2017. So we're going to have to look at renegotiating. It's not going to be cleaned up by 2017. So there will be an evaluation in the next couple of, the next few years about how long we'll extend that agreement for to be able to deal with that contamination. Ken has suggested, 45-50% complete. It's very, very hard to know. We know that some of the contaminant concentrations are decreasing in some areas. So that's one thing we have to go by. The only operable unit that I know of that's really done a performance evaluation is up here in this Baldwin Park operable unit up here. Okay, and I don't think they're making any real predictions on how long they'll be in place, how long they'll be around to be able to have to clean this up. So, it's very difficult.
We can't say that there's some areas that are almost clean.
I wouldn't say that there's any areas that are almost clean.
Okay, when I say 50%, that's 50% what we estimate as the amount of money necessary for us to be able to get these projects under control and significantly cleaned up.
The financial
percentage. Financial percentage, not a percentage to go 40, 50.
Director Robbins, I'm going to go ahead and let him continue.
Yeah. And one of the things I would say on that bill is that, we've had to, and we're all water people here. There's no responsible parties here. So that's good. We've had to keep your foot on the gas pedal with these responsible parties pretty hard to bring them to the table, along with EPA, the regional board, to pay their fair share to get this stuff cleaned up. And my assessment would be we don't need to take our foot off that pedal. We're going to need responsible party money for a long time to do this. So. Okay, this is a summary, a little bit of a summary of the Baldwin Park operable unit. A lot of what we talked about before, the size of the facilities, the key ones, and this goes to what Ken said a little bit earlier, over 40,000 acre-feet of water treated since 2004, if I can barely see this with my glasses, and over almost 30,000 pounds of contaminants removed since 2004. That's the key information. The rest of it is a little bit duplicative of some of the other slides, but that's just a summary. But also, it does show the treatment technology here for you guys. We have three wells operating. You got air strippers, which removes VOCs with off gas, carbon, liquid phase GAC, which also removes VOCs, ion exchange, which removes the perchlorate and the NDMA, and advanced oxidation, which also removes the NDMA. So, and then the UV, which removes the NDMA. So, that's the treatment trade for that technology.
RO is not contemplated?
No. RO is very, very similar to ion exchange. Removes the same kinds of contaminants. Ion exchange works better on these contaminants, so we're using ion exchange. So this is plant B5 showing the same thing. What we're doing is we're showing the treatment technology. That was B6. This is B5. Over 55,000 acre-feet since 2004. 11,000 pounds removed. Airstripping, we got airstripping, we've got ion exchange, advanced oxidation, UV, some of the same technology. That's the B5 facility, both of these are dams. Oh, B6, I can't see it. There's B5. Glasses aren't that good. And there's B5. Same information, over 40, I guess the first one was Dolly County. Over 40,000 acre feet treated, 1,100 pounds of contaminants removed. There's your capacity, there's your treatment tank technology. Two wells with a backup there, liquid phase GAC, ion exchange, advanced oxidation, and UV for that facility. So these are just summaries of the projects. Now we go to La Puente, smaller facility. This was actually the first one, and You know, there ought to be a little maybe a pat on the back here, because this is the project that actually got things going with the response of all of the parties. This district, upper district, and Bill was around, and I think Tony was around. This district teamed up with the WQA and the Water Master to fund the treatment plant, and then once they funded the treatment plant for Lapointe Valley County Water District, then a lawsuit was filed against the responsible parties to recover that money. So the idea was, we need to go out and have damages so we can go sue them for it. That brought them to the table and ended up with the ballpark off of unit agreement. So this is kind of an important project. And there's been a lot added to this project since it was originally designed. Now here we've got over 34,000 acre feet treated and over 8,000 pounds of contaminants removed since 2000. You see it's the earliest facility, 2000. Same treatment technology, air stripping via vapor phase carbon ion exchange, advanced oxidation. So there's your main BPOU facilities. Cal Domestic, over almost 300,000 acre feet treated since 1993. They actually put their own facility in first and then got some reimbursement for that. So Cal Domestic was out in front of this. Over 8,500 pounds of contaminants removed, provide ground extraction wells, monitoring pipelines. So this is just a summary. Same kind of contaminants, VOCs, perchlorate, MDMA, ion exchange, air strippers, and such. So pretty much a lot of the same facilities in the Baldwin Park operable unit. Here's some information on the cost. Gosh, it's really hard for me to see from here, but cost includes 30 years of ongoing care. The estimated cost for all this is about $850 million by the WQA back in 2011. That's for the whole project. About $300 million has already been spent, so a lot of money being spent. That's why I mentioned this is the biggest contamination site. With about $414 million to be funded over the 15 years of operation, as we talk about the 15-year contract. And then here's a breakdown of some of the money that's being spent. Responsible parties, $320 million, will fund over the next for the first 15 years. So big numbers up here, $850 shows we've got some ways to go, because with $418 million projected to be spent through the 15 years and the original estimate $850, we're going to be spending quite a bit of money here over the next few years. And this is the proposed schedule. This is the 15-year contract. Directing and overseeing, this is EPA's enforcement.
How reliable is the flow of money that goes in?
Well, on this particular case, there is an agreement in place, and the water entities, this is what I talked about, keeping your foot on the pedal with the responsible parties. There's a pretty solid agreement in place with the responsible agencies in this operable unit on actually placing money into an escrow account. So the money actually goes into an escrow account with a budget before the money is spent, so the money is there. In addition to that, there's a separate escrow account. So the water entities, when they negotiated this agreement, had a real concern that the responsible parties might at some point walk away from this. And then there would be a period of time when they would have operating costs and no funding, and they would have to go to court to get to bring you guys back to the table. They actually negotiated a separate escrow account for, like, a whole year's worth of operations and maintenance in the event these guys walk away from the table, that's in an escrow account right now. So this is pretty solid funding through the 15 years, assuming these guys stay in business, don't go bankrupt on us. So pretty good shape here. South Amani operable unit, otherwise both the South Amani, El Monte, and Rosemead. Some of the information found where the contamination is found, some shallow and deep stuff, some of the contaminants are shown there. There's the map. South of Monte, you can see it's just a little El Monte, but that shows the boundary of the South of Monte operable unit, which is just above Whittier Narrows. So this refers back to the big map. Maybe I can see it better here. The immediate groundwater zone is being treated to remove VOCs. Treatment for perchlorate was required initially, but it was discontinued because it basically disappeared. These are some of the areas where maybe some of the stuff is actually cleaning up, some of the lower levels in this area. Information on the projects. We've got smaller projects in the other operations from BPOU, so we put them on the same page here. We've got San Gabriel Valley's D8 plant, which is has wells 8, B, C, and D, 8,000 or 5,000 GPM, so some of the treatment technology. We've got Monterey Park, wells 9, 12, and 15, 4,500 GPM is the project, VOCs and perchlorate there. So it shows about 26,000 acre feet treated with 2,600 pounds of contaminants for the San Gabriel project. Almost 40,000 acre feet treated since 2002 for Monterey Park with 5,300 pounds of contaminants removed in this project. Yes, sir.
Steve, you're also showing Monterey Park wells 5 and 6, 2,100 ppm. Are those wells impacted? And
On the drawing there?
Yeah, you're showing here.
Those wells, I think, I'm trying to recall, Charles, but I believe those wells also pump to the treatment facility. But these are the main project wells. But those projects, yes, they are also impacted, and they're able to serve water in that facility also.
Okay.
As alternate wells.
As alternate wells.
Yeah.
Okay.
Monterey Park, there's well five, okay. And with VOCs, it's got some of its own treatment located for VOCs only. 12,000 acre feet treated and 800 pounds of contaminants since 1999. That's Golden State Water Company, the San Gabriel wells, 2,200 GPM treatment facility with LGAC ion exchange. 9,000 acre feet treated since 2001, 300 pounds of contaminants removed. This is all part of the South Amaya effluent. Here's some of the cost. Estimated cost, about $159 million for this project. With about $40 million that's spent, you see we've got a ways to go spending money here, with $55 million projected to be funded. And I believe this projection is about over the next about 7 or 8 years. This is not where you'll be spent over the 7 or 8 years. Between those two, it's about $90 million compared to the $160 million that needs to be spent. Here's the contributing parties, where we're getting the money. EPA, $7.9 million, federal grants, state grants, water producers. We've got responsible parties with about $7 million. So we've got a lot of money to spend there also. Here's some information. This is just some basic information on U.S. EPA's enforcement. And the fact that they're continuing to study the contamination and possibly modifying the remedy for that treatment facility, that operable unit. Then we got El Monte operable unit, which is right above it. Underlies the city of El Monte, Rosemary Temple City. Cleanup directed by East Side and West Side sub-projects. And again, some of these guys have their own, and Ken can remember that some of these guys have their own names. Baldwin Park has a cooperating respondent. Some of the East Side responding parties and the West Side responding parties. So you'll hear that. Those are really just special names for responsible parties. They like to name themselves something because they come to the table to try to separate themselves from the responsible parties who aren't at the table. Some of these responsible parties are still being pursued by EPA, so that's why they give themselves special names. Here's the El Monte operable unit right here. Shows the projects, western shallow area. We've got the southern deep area here. We've got 200 GPM, pretty much low production. Eastern shallow, 200 GPM. And then northwestern over here, we got the big project over here. So these are all shallow, deep with low production, 600. This is shallow and shallow. So you see the 200 GPM. Typically, when you're pulling contaminants off the shallow aquifer, it's several smaller wells, like in the 50 to 100 GPM. And when you go up to the deeper production, you've got bigger wells, usually 500 to maybe 1,500 GPM. That's what you'll see over here. So this is the location of the projects.
So the deepest contamination area of the basin is Baldwin Park.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. That's the deepest part of the basin, too. And here's your individual projects. Some description of your eastern shallow zone right here, 200 GPM, 5 wells, as I mentioned there. So 5 wells, pretty small production there. And some injection wells to put the water back in the ground after it's been treated. Southern deep zone, we have 3 wells at 600 GPM. With proposed water being treated and served at the city of El Monte. You've got western shallow, 205 wells for 200 GPM, discharged to the Rio Hondo. This lot water will be recovered at spreading grounds. Your northwestern deep zone, 2,250 GPM, 2,250 GPM. 3 existing wells are operating. Here's the removal, almost 16,000 acre feet of treated water, over 300 pounds of contaminants since 1998. Here's some information on cost. Estimated cost, $124 million for this, for completion, estimated by W2A in their report in 2011. About $16 million been spent. We've got a long way to go in spending money there, with $16 million projected over the next 8 years of operation. Here's what we're looking at. Responsible parties will fund about 48 of that, which is a big chunk of that. And we've got some federal funds and W2A money coming in there. And here's the proposed schedule. Construction of the remaining cleanup systems is ongoing right now to get those things operating. Operation is expected to start 2012, full operations of all the facilities. So they're still working on this one. Whittier Narrows Aquifer Marina. This is the one I mentioned as the EPA fund lead. So the EPA is putting the money into this. They built this thing and got it in operation early. It's down at the, and the idea was to protect Central Basin. Whatever was going on, the idea was to keep it from going into Central Basin, so you set your barrier at the lower end, and then you go up and try to clean up in the basin. This is a long one. Underlying Whittier Narrows at the dam, we got the information, shallow zones, with some shallow zones and deep zone stuff, greater than 100 feet. Primary contaminants, PCE and TCE, the early VOCs we found in the basin. There are some concentrations of NDMA and perchlorate present, but primary PCE and TCE. There's the location, there's the Narrows right there. Here's the identification of their of the treatment facilities right in the middle of the contamination. So here's the operable unit, and there's the plume right here in the central basin. The idea is to keep it out of Central Basin. Yes, sir.
BGS, what is that?
Which one is it?
BGS.
BGS is below ground surface. I'm sorry. But yeah, BGS is just below ground surface. Extraction sites, these are extraction sites for Whittier Narrows operable unit. We got shallow 2,000 GPM VOCs, four wells, over 27,000 acre feet treated with 1,600 pounds of contaminants removed, decreasing contamination without reducing or terminating reduction. I guess this one's going to be looked at by TPSC, not just EPA, because they're going to be taking it over to see whether or not it is doing its job. Intermediate zone 6,000 GPM VOCs is all LGAC, look at HGAC. Those are the big vessels you see lined up if you're down in the Whittier Narrows area. 29,000 acre feet treated, 1,000 pounds of contaminants removed. They've entered into, they have an agreement right now with the city of Whittier to operate and maintain. Whittier's taking the water. There are discussions going on right now, just so you have the latest information, that Whittier may not continue to take that water, so there's negotiated discussions with other water agencies that may take that water. City of Whittier, Whittier has determined. But the deal they made for this was a good deal for them. Oops. The deal they made for this involved the fact that they would get this treated water. So they wouldn't have to pay pumping costs. The EPA would pump the water out of the ground, treat it, and give it to them. They wouldn't have to pay pumping costs. So they're saving a little money and getting water in their system. They've determined that even, but they would have to use water rights to get water rights in the basin. Even with that deal, they have a better better access to water rights in Central Basin to serve the water system. So they're thinking that they maybe convert to and use their Central Basin water rights, at least got their main basin water rights, but then we'll need to find somebody else to take this water. And there are a couple other water agencies that are lined up to maybe take that water in the main basin. So it's an issue. So if you hear something about it, it's being worked on right now. Here's the cost again. Total estimated $22 million spent. The project is about $46 million, $22 million. It's been in place quite a while. Funded by UNCP as a fund lead, and we got the DTSC right there as toxic substance control to take over the project to hopefully continue the remedy and protect the Central Basin. Some other information on, they got a 5-year review, just completed a 5-year review of the remedy in September 2011, so DTSC is looking at that, and we've given you the dates on DTSC taking over 2013 that Ken had mentioned. Plenty about the operable unit. Underlying City of Industry, this is the one that comes in from the east and then slides over and goes into our basin. City of Industry, La Puente, the modern unincorporated areas of the county. Contamination of the shallow and intermediate zones. VOC have exceeded drinking water standards in both the shallow and intermediate zones. Here's your contaminants. And here's the Pointy Valley Upper Limit. I mentioned before this kind of comes up and around. Whittier Narrows is right over here, kind of up and around in the basin. There's mountains right here. The Pointy Hills right here goes up and around and dumps in the basin like this. And here's the operable unit, and here's the contamination. Here's the remedy. Intermediate zone, 1,500 GPM. Shallow zone, 1,200 GPM. And there's an identification of where the intermediate zone, or assuming the shallow zone is. And here's another treatment project right in this area. Okay. Shows you where they are. Extraction sites, shallow and intermediate zone. Three groundwater extraction and treatment systems are placed as part of the intermediate remedy. Here's your shallow zone, 1200 GPM existing wells, using 9 existing wells. Selenium, there's an issue out here which, Ken may want to just take a moment to talk about our discharge permit we're working on, the discharge issue of natural selenium. Natural selenium in this area, in the ground, actually exceeds the discharge limit. It doesn't exceed the drinking water standard, but exceeds the discharge limit because selenium affects fish and wildlife downstream. We don't have a lot of fish and wildlife downstream, but it's still the discharge limit. So this is creating a problem because the water doesn't meet drinking water standards for some of the other contaminants, but it does for selenium. So we can't use the water. We want to put the water back in the ground and replenish it. but regional board will not let us. So I don't know, Ken, you wanted to add anything about what we're doing there?
I was going to mention the discharge issue at the end. I'll go back to
okay.
talk a little
bit about how this all fits. Okay, that works. Too bad you can remember that Selenium was one of the problems. Extraction sites, you get the immediate zone, 1500 GPM with six existing wells with VOCs. Part of what we use by San Gabriel, actually, I think more. I think San Gabriel is probably using all of the water at this point for Pointe Valley. Yeah, originally it was partial, but I think they worked on it. Was a blend issue with San Gabriel with their clean water, be able to blend the water, be able to use all the water all year long because the demands go up and down, but I think they've worked that out, so it will be San Gabriel most likely using all that water. Groundwater south of Pointe Creek, there's actually an individual cleanup site called the Benchmark Technology Facility. That is an individual site cleanup that the responsible parties have taken over. That is also a cleanup. And this will be most likely will be a cleanup and either reinjection or groundwater replenishment. Cost estimated cost total $120 million according to June 2011 cost. Total cost 30 years. About $12 million has been spent. $59 million is projected to be funded over the next 8 years of operation. Responsible parties will fund about 52 of that total cost, so we're looking for responsible parties stepping up, and they are working on this project. Regular meetings are held at WQA with all the responsible parties coming to the table and trying to keep this project moving along. Here's some of the enforcement, the scheduling enforcement work that's being done right now. Bottom line, construction of all three cleanups is expected to be completed by 2014-15 and be in operation. The big stuff. Area 3, Alhambra. Undergoing investigation right now. They're in their remedial investigation feasibility studies right now. This is probably what it is. This is the one area that's sort of trailing in the enforcement of EPA. They didn't anticipate this was the highest priority, but they're getting to it now. So they're doing the remedial investigation feasibility study, trying to sort of characterize the contamination and come up with a remedy. So far, primary contaminants include TC and PCE. Some of these others are present out there. But they're basically just working on characterization right now, and then they will develop a remedy over in that area.
Is there $1 million grant to feed into that cleaner, if it does?
Actually, the treatment facility is located above it in the Raymond Basin.
That's part of the other.
Yeah, but it is part of the contamination that could possibly be feeding into this area. So you are cleaning up some contamination that could be going across the Raymond Basin fault into this area. So yeah, it is helping. And we're working on that project, as Ken. Extraction sites. This is the more information on the remedial investigation for EPA. Part of the characterization, just a summary for Area 3 on the investigation work they're doing. Here's the cost estimates. They're real preliminary at this point, but $32 million estimated, about $17 million projected over the next probably 8 years with some of the contributing parties. Proposed schedule plans to complete the FS, feasibility study, that's the characterization I mentioned, for 2012, issue a proposed plan. So we're getting into the characterization for that project right now. Here's an overall summary. This is a good reference for you. This kind of shows each of the operable units and the EPA process that you go through. These are all the EPA steps you go through, and as you can see, where each project is in that process. Okay? This is not necessarily a timeline, but it shows you where they are in the overall EPA process that ultimately gets you into long-term operations and maintenance. We have a couple in that long-term operations and maintenance. Sort of your question, Bill, how far along are we? We need all of them in this stage, and then we'll start cleaning things up, but we need to get them all over here. So. That's a quick reference, guys. At least it's fine. Okay, that's the operable unit stuff. Before I talk about other contaminants, did you want to talk about discharge or?
Sure. I can kind of fill in on some of these operable units.
Because we're going to go to some little bit other stuff real quick.
Sure. Just to kind of fill in the blanks on some of the other stuff. As Steve mentioned, with Whittier Air, we've got a current issue down there dealing with who's going to continue with the project. The city of Whittier has indicated they are not as interested in taking the water. They're not sure that they want to turn over operation of the facility, but they don't want the water. So that creates a dilemma for both EPA and DTSC, because in a year, less than a year now, DTSC is going to be taking over this project and starting to operate it, and they're concerned that they're taking over a project that's less than complete. And so we're working with both of those entities to negotiate some sort of a transition for them to make sure that this project has ongoing long-term commitments for the Whittier Narrows. Because I keep telling everybody, this is our backstop. If this project isn't working, we've got some real problems down in the Whittier Narrows because the Central Basin is constantly watching what we're doing to make sure that the Upper District is completing its commitments. So it's important. A couple things in El Monte, as Stephen mentioned, they like to refer to themselves by different names, but we just, you know, the Gould, or in one case, the east side is the Gould, or the west side, the Hermetic Seal. Both of those are making good progress. We just approved the work on the city of El Monte to approve the CEQA project on the east side project. The Water Quality Authority is acting as a lead agency on behalf of Rosemead. The city of Rosemead did not want to take that decision. El Monte is working as a lead agency for El Monte. We're taking the lead agency position as Rosemead. Just approved the CEQA. We're in the 30-day review period right now. And hopefully if we get through that without any real problem, we'll be in a position to be able to start construction. I think Steve did a good job of outlining what the project entails in terms of El Monte taking some of the water. The rest of the water is going to be reinjected. So it's a good project. In the South El Monte Operating Unit, good progress has been made. You know, when I got back from the Chino Basin from my almost 7 years out there, needless to say, when I got back to Water Quality Authority, there were some real surprises in terms of things that I think went really well during that period I was on. And there were some areas that I think were disappointing, and that we hadn't made more progress. One of those was South El Monte. And we had been churning through this legal process. Each one of these operable units, I think it's important to note, is not just different in the characteristics of the flows of contamination, but each one of them has their own chemistry based on the responsible parties. In the case of Baldwin Park operable units, the CRs over there, large entities working with parties that have money and have the ability to be able to take on these projects. It was a large target for us to go after. South El Monte, complete opposite. You've got a lot of mom and pops that operate down in South El Monte, Rosemead area, and Monterey Park. And so it was really important that we didn't destroy the economy of South El Monte and Monterey Park and Alhambra. At the same time, we wanted to make sure that those projects were fully funded. So a series of lawsuits were undertaken. We had a whole different series of settlements that have gone on. I can clearly say now that the light is at the end of the tunnel on settlements. It appears that we are reaching settlements with our last parties, and finally that end of the project is done. In the meantime, our three different entities who have been pumping down there have been doing a great job of pumping, getting out in front of the project, of the contaminants, getting the program cleaned up. As Steve mentioned, we're working with VOCs now. Perchlorates, although we're ready to deal with perchlorates, it doesn't appear at this point in time that perchlorates is going to be the monster now that we thought it might be. So that is moving forward. The other thing I want to mention is Prop 84 in its funding mix of how we're getting funds. Everybody knows that the federal government right now is not in a position to be handing out money to us. Unfortunately, our project, as it's funded, the H.R. 910, the Restoration Fund, is considered an earmark. Now, I don't consider it an earmark. Probably you wouldn't consider it an earmark, but it's considered an earmark. So consequently, we're not getting any funds from that federal funding. Even though we have over $50 million left out of the authorization, we're still not receiving any funds left. So we're looking at the state now to try and contribute. About 6 months ago, we applied for Prop 84 money from the Department of Public Health. We found out a few weeks ago that we were actually granted $14 million on five different projects. So where we're not getting money from the federal government, we've been able to substitute in some state funds, and we're able to keep on going. So we're, in terms of funding, we're doing okay. We're hopeful that the federal government is able to solve that problem in the near future, and we're able to get back on track and get federal funds within a few years. The systemic area discharge permit is something that is plaguing not just the operable units. It's plaguing anybody who is developing wells or rehabbing wells or developing monitoring programs. The ability to be able to pump the waste, that is, pump to the rivers of the state of California and the nation, that issue has been put on hold because of lawsuits. And so consequently, projects that we would like to get on target right now and get on track are on hold. And so this issue of discharge permits needs to be resolved. And so the Water Quality Authority Board has authorized me to work with consultants on a solution to that. And there are essentially two different tracks going right now. One of them is, in the past, we've been using what's called the MS4 permit as part of the solution to our discharge issues. Water Quality Authority, in talking with all the different entities, including the environmental community, have determined that probably the MS4 is not the way to go for water entity in itself would pump for potable water purposes, that a separate NPDES permit, the general discharge permit, is something that's probably more preferable. And so we're working with Steve. Tracy Abascu is our lead consultant on this issue. And we're working on trying to acquire a discharge permit, not just for the San Gabriel Valley, but this would be a region-wide permit that would allow us to discharge for short periods of time into the rivers at limits that exceed the basin objectives. And it's a short-term, allows us to be able to pump to waste, get projects online, and then put water in before the water system. So it seems like a more logical approach. It seems like an approach that fits us. The MS4 is, although it's been a very good vehicle for us in the past, it appears to be wrought with problems and so issues. And so we're going to be working on that. As a matter of fact, Shane and I are going to be talking about that soon to see get his discussion, his points of view on this issue. So it's something that's really important to us and something we're working on. So with that, I'll turn it back over to you.
The small pumpers, the mutual water companies, how are they affected in this mix?
Well, there are certain
they are.
Pumpers, we've gone through the rod projects, there are the non-rod projects that, and other issues that Steve's going to go into now. For the most part, most of the small pumpers, the mutuals, have been unaffected, whether they're able to get water based upon other strategies. Most of the pumpers that we're using in most of these operable units are larger, either privates or municipalities. So mutuals themselves, smaller companies are not being affected.
Just before we leave the operable unit discussion, this is the EPA Superfund site, the operable unit discussion. I put the map lines up there just to see if anybody had any other questions or if Tony wanted to add anything from a water master perspective about the operable unit discussion, because these are the areas where EPA is involved and we have specified cleanup projects within specific areas.
No, I mean, just to reemphasize that going forward, a lot of the things that's going to be on water master's radar screen is that even though there's still a few years left in the BPOU agreement, that one of our goals is to start working with the water entities to look at what the new agreement will look like.
Yep.
And kind of putting a bow on the first 15 years of what characterizing what's happened and how effective it was.
Yeah. Well, our relationship with the CS, I'm not sure if it will be. That's interesting. And just real quick, just for the opportunity, Dan is very active in the Baltimore Harbor. I don't know if Dan wanted anything about the and several of the operable units. Don't mind.
Just operating the operable units to the best of our ability.
Yep.
G5, G6, we're speaking with EPA. We met yesterday to the William Narrows operable unit. So thank you, Weather Water Company, that work putting up the clean water back into the system.
Yeah.
We did have a V6 failure. I'm sure everybody's aware of it. The V6 plant did have a failure on March 8th. In less than 24 hours, we were able to rectify that and create clean water for the system. Okay. We're working with the health department and the DR to rectify the problem at the V6 plant.
Yep. For those of you who don't know, it was was one of the ion exchange facilities. One of the ones we are actually in the process of changing out because it's been there a long time. The technology's been improved. That had a faulty valve that allowed some of the perchlorate that was part of the brine to go back through the plant. And after a period of time, the treated water levels for chlorate exceeded the MCL. Not by a lot. It was the MCL is 6, and it was up around
8.8
was the highest they saw in the system. But there was notification required, and it was fixed right away. It was taken care of.
We're also in the nitrate treatment system at the D6 plant to address nitrates, and we also have the single pass ion exchange system, which is sitting waiting for EPH approval to go online.
Yeah, and actually, Ken's comments about the discharge issue. The discharge permit that Ken is working on will help facilitate us bringing that new treatment plant online, because one of the things that's happened now is we're not able to even test new treatment technology. But when you test it, you normally run it to discharge where you get your health department permit for your testing process. Well, we can't discharge because of the new discharge regs, which is holding up operation of a new plant that is sitting there with the latest technology ready to go, built, paid for, ready to operate, can't operate for health department testing. So that's one of the other key components of WQA's work on the discharge. So anyway, I'm going to move real quick. This won't take very long at all. to get us through this stuff. Water quality issues which may impact cleanup efforts. There's some new regs that are being talked about that should they change the regs, lower the maximum contaminant levels, lower the regulatory requirements, they could impact our treatment technologies that we've got. So we'll talk about those. And then just some other contaminants of concern that you may be aware of in the basin, just let you know where we're at on those things. And the first thing here is just a quick reference to maximum contaminant levels. Those are levels set by the Department of Public Health for drinking water standards. The public, everybody knows what they are. But you're not allowed to exceed a maximum contaminant level. And if you do, it can be considered a violation, and you have to go to public notification, and it becomes a bad situation for us to do it all the way. So maximum contaminant levels are very, very serious standards that all the water entities are aware of, and obviously do their very, very best to keep well below any maximum contaminant levels. For reference purposes, the Office of Environmental Health Hazard Assessment, OEHA, and you guys have heard, some of the audience have heard something about public health goals. And the waterways, some of the directors here, from Valley Center, some of the directors, know that you have to issue information on public health goals. And the public health goals are standards that are levels that are set by the OEHA office, which are based strictly on health effects. And they don't take into consideration treatment technology or cost of treatment or anything like that. They're just based upon health effects, and they're sort of like the, and I don't mean to be to that one, but they're sort of like the pie in the sky number that this office, the Office of Health Hazard, would look at to say, if we were able to treat everything out there, what level would we like to see things contaminants treated down to without any other consideration. Those are set by the Office of OEHA as a public health goal. They are not standards. They're not enforceable. The health department does enforce them. They actually will, at times, they will require that they'll use a notification level that will be tied around a public health goal where you have to notify people that you're approaching a standard. But essentially, the public health goal is a non-enforceable standard. But it is a goal. It is something that is out there. It is something the health department uses to evaluate their MCL. California Department of Public Health is required to establish a maximum contaminant level at oil as close as technically and economically feasible to the PHG. So that's where it comes in. Economically and technically feasible to meet it. They said it's close to the PHG. So that's the goal of the health department. The health department is also required to review their MCLs at least once every 5 years. So once they set it, they're required every 5 years to go back and look at it and see whether or not it's more technically feasible or more economical to bring it down, bring that level down, and get closer to the PHG. That's what the health department does. Health department proposes, when they propose an MCL, if they do a review or a new MCL, they propose the MCL based on water quality, monitoring, exposure, treatment technology, health risk, and cost factors. Those are the main things that they use to set an MCL that you guys will see, the water agencies will see, and the have to be met for delivering water, the potable water to the customer. When the OEHA office actually adopts the PHG, health department, there's always a discussion, how long does it take to get from a public health goal to an MCL? And typically, health department has indicated it takes between 3 and 4 years to develop an MCL and complete the formal rulemaking process to go from a PHG to an MCL. So when you do see a PHG, a lot of people tend to get a little up in arms about it, and it is something that you need to pay attention to because it is something that is coming, but typically it takes 3 to 4 years to go from a PHG to do all the evaluation and then for the Department of Public Health to even propose a new MCL that will go through public review also. So we need to pay attention to PHGs, but the real standard is our MCLs. So that's a little briefing on some of the health department goal setting and some of the standards they set. Some of the things that we are addressing, the primary contaminants that we are addressing in the operable units, I want to go through and let you know some of the things being discussed. One of them is TCE, trichloroethylene. Okay, the PHG was originally set in, that's the PHG now, not the MCL, at 0.8 parts per million, PPD, parts per million, in 2001. It was actually raised to 1.7 in 2009. The MCL was set at 5 in 1989. It's still at 5. EPA is talking about a revision to that MCL. There's not a lot of information. We kind of get the impression that they may be looking around 1, but there really is no formal indication of where they might be going. But right now it's at 5. They may be looking at trying to get it down to around 1. In the main basin, we've taken a look at that because our treatment technology, we have several different kinds of wells in the basin. A well might have a detection below the MCL and nothing's being done. They may have a detection at or near the MCL or even a little above the MCL, and they may blend with other sources to meet the MCL, which they have an approved blend plan. Or they may not detect, or they may be over the MCL and they have a dedicated treatment facility. If they have a dedicated treatment facility, depending on the treatment technology, if you're using, for example, liquid phase GAC, it basically removes all of the VOCs because it's an absorption process where you actually put the water in contact with the carbon, it pulls out the VOCs, and you effectively have non-detect, very, very low levels. The other technology we use is air stripping, where we actually take the water and we put it at the top of a tower, we blow air through the bottom, and we actually volatilize the VOCs right out of the water and take it out through a volatilization process. As you would expect, that process, while it's very effective in getting down to our MCLs, is not quite as effective as liquid phase GAC because you're basically trying to volatilize it, and depending on your air-to-water ratios, how much water you blow through it compared to air and the water, you may remove, you know, different levels of the VOCs. They're all designed to remove down to non-detect, but the technology, while acceptable, best available technology, we do have some VOC technology that if they get these standards too low, the new MCLs get too low, we may have some concerns with that technology. So we're looking at that also. So here's what we're looking at. 64 active wells with TCE greater than the MCL. 60 wells have dedicated treatment, and 4 wells have blend plans, which I talked about. We have 4 active wells with TCE between 1 and 4 parts per billion, and we have 113 active wells with TCE less than 1 part per billion. So those wells would not likely be affected if the MCL was dropped to 1. The rest of these wells we would need to look at. We would have to look at it, and we already have, actually. We've looked at the treatment technology, and one of the things we do, this is just for general information, but one of the things we do when we look at this is, what is our laboratory detection level? Because historically, the labs are able to get lower and lower in their detection level, but some of our historic records on the TCE level of treated water after it goes through a treatment plant, some of our historic concentrations of after-treatment VOCs only have a detection level that may go down close to that 1 part per million. So we may not even know whether or not, if it's non-detected 1, it could be detectable at 0.5 or 0.2 if they should go lower. We just don't have that information because the labs haven't been testing down that far. So that's an issue with all of our contaminants, is what our laboratory has been able to detect with the technology historically while we've done this testing. So here's some information. We basically see 113 wells. We don't think we'll be impacted. We don't think we'll be impacted at all if it goes down to 1. And then these other wells we would have to look at and look at some of the treatment technology, some of the blend plans, and see what the treated water quality is to make sure it gets down that low, which we are already looking at. Shane's refresher is coming up for Shane, so we can look at water supply impacts in the basin. PCE, you see a lot of PCE where you see TCE. Generally speaking, not at as high a concentration and not as high a quantity. We don't see as much PCE around as we do TCE out there, but a lot of the same information on it. Here's the public health pool 0.06, very, very low. The MCL set at 5, and wherever we, this is a PCE impact in the basin, we expect it to be very, very similar to TCE. We expect an EPA and health marshals, we will look at TCE before they look at PCE, so we focused on TCE, but we're still looking at TCE. The next one is perchlorate. The public health code is 6, so is the FCL at 6, established in 2007. There is a revised PHG that was set in 2011 at 1. That becomes a concern. Part of our concern here is, again, is laboratory detection levels. Laboratory detection levels have been down to 1.5, but we don't have a lot of information getting much lower than that. So a lot of our stuff is non-detect at 1, so that creates an issue for us. And here's a summary of the testing in the basin. I note at the bottom, this includes the wells with perchlorate treatment. So I'm identifying wells, raw water, not treated water, but just wells in the basin. If there's wells above the MCL, we're treating the wells with dedicated treatment ion exchange. So we got less than the laboratory detection level of 1.0. We got 7 that are less than the laboratory detection level. The DLR is the detection level, laboratory detection level for reporting purposes, okay, which is 1.0. At the laboratory detection level, at 2.0, which it used to be, we had 3 wells. At 3.0, we had 121 wells below that. And then at 4, we have 3 wells. Between 4 and 6, we have 52 wells. And I think it's greater than 6 is 62 wells for a total of 229 wells. So that gives you a spread of where we would see wells fall if they decided to lower that MCL. But again, anything over 6, we have dedicated treatment. So we've included that note at the bottom there. Chrome 6, you've heard a lot about Chrome 6. Hinckley, Brockovich, all that kind of stuff. San Fernando Basin's got a big Chrome 6 problem. We don't have much of a problem here in this basin, at least not now. Depending on what they do with the Chrome 6 standard, it could be a huge problem. Right now in California, the MCL for total chrome, okay, that's total chrome, okay, which includes Chrome 6 and all the other chromes, is 50 ppb. We don't have any problem meeting the 50 ppb for total chrome in the basin. The PHG that they've established for Chrome 6 is 0.02 ppb, obviously much lower than the total chrome. I've got a note down here at the bottom, which is kind of an important note that we learned when we did some testing in the basin for Chrome 6. The Chrome 6 represents about 70 to 90% of the total chrome in the main basin. We have total chrome levels in this basin, folks, of anywhere between 20 and 40 prevalent across the basin. If you take 20 and 40 ppb of total chrome and 70-90% of that, we are way, way over a PHG of 0.02. So that tells you that should they lower the standard anywhere near the PHG, we're going to have a huge chrome 6 problem in our basin. But to give you a little more comfort, so will everybody else. total chrome is a natural occurring mineral out there in groundwater. Total chrome, our normal levels in our basin, are those levels throughout the state of California. So if they do this, it's going to be a huge problem for chrome. And here's some of the test results we have. If we get down to 0.1 part per billion, we have 10 wells at
both of those.
Oh, point. I'm shooting. Can't quite see it. Laboratory detection level of 0.1 part per billion, we have 10 wells. At 1 part, we got 16 wells. Greater than 1 part per billion. Now, this is greater than 1 part per billion. Now, you compare this to this, that's 0.02. We've got a big spread here. 183 wells. Big problem, okay? So keep an eye on the Chrome 6, PHG, and any MCLs they're talking about.
What was your piece for that?
I don't think we have it. I honestly don't think we have it. It's a naturally occurring mineral.
No, it's Chrome 6. That's not natural.
Chrome 6 is a piece of total chrome. Okay. It is a part of total chrome, which is naturally occurring. Up in Hinckley, they use a lot of chromium for their cleaning on the PG&E, top of the vessels and things. They used a lot of it in discharging. It's a different deal there. I'm not sure about San Fernando Basin, what chemical stuff they have here. We have no information on responsible parties in our basin on Chrome 6.
I would say there are no responsible parties that we could identify at this point. The levels that Steve's talking about are pretty much background levels in a lot of basins.
Yeah.
So this would indicate that there is no responsible party. It's just naturally occurring.
Yeah.
Well, it doesn't make sense. Chromium 4 is a vitamin. I mean,
yes.
Swallow.
Yes.
So it doesn't make sense to regulate something that's good for you and something that's bad for you as total chromium.
Yep.
That makes no sense at all.
Well, that's where we need to get involved in the regulation setting between a public health quota and MCL.
You're right.
We need to get involved. Well, and there are agents. There's actually a work group right now working on this Chrome 6. I just had a conference call that we participated in. I think WQE did too. Participated in this last week. That's working on good science and regulation setting. So that's the Chrome 6. MTBE, you guys have heard a lot about MTBE. It got real popular for a while because of the gasoline added. We basically don't have a problem in this space. We did a lot of testing for MTBE. PHG was 13, was set at in 1999. Secondary standard says 5 and 99 to address safety and other concerns. Primary became a primary MCL at 13 in 2000. For health concerns. Historically, MTBE has only been detected in 2 wells. They're down in the Whittier Narrows area. They're not portable wells. haven't seen it. I'm not sure why. We got gas stations everywhere. We've looked, have not seen it, but we don't have an MTBE problem. So maybe we're just lucky on that. Nitrates, big problem. Very similar bill to Chrome 6, but not quite, because we do have fertilizers and then the septic tanks and things that add to the nitrates. But again, a big problem. A lot of nitrate is naturally occurring. Vegetation up in the mountains, as we get runoff from the mountain, vegetation comes down to our springs. We get nitrates into our groundwater just from vegetation. There's a lot of natural nitrate in our water. It's actually impacting our cleanup remedies right now, because, and I don't want to give you a lot of detail about this, but our original perchlorate technology was an ion exchange, regenerable resin ion exchange technology, took out perchlorate and nitrates, although it's very, very expensive and consumes a lot of salt. In the ion exchange process, the chloride and the salt, the ion exchange process consumes truckloads of salt to make that process work. The responsible parties in the ballpark operating unit are not responsible for nitrate contamination. That's pretty clear. There's not an issue there. Okay? But we were able to use, this was the best available technology at the time, and it addressed the nitrates too. New technology that we're looking at is single pass ion exchange, where they have a resin that they're using that is dedicated for perchlorate and does not really address the nitrates, which means it leaves the nitrates. In the process of this remedy, we've seen nitrate levels in some of these wells creep up now. So now we're talking about changing our technology from a very expensive technology that removed perchlorate and nitrate to just a perchlorate technology, because that's what the responsible parties are responsible for. And the problem is our nitrate levels are coming up, and so we're having trouble trying to figure out how to address the nitrate levels as our nitrate levels come up, and who's responsible for the nitrate contamination. So we've actually, at least one plant, we've identified we're looking at a dedicated nitrate treatment facility on the same site as the new ion exchange facility, and looking for funding to do that. So it's created a problem for us. But nitrates, that's that first note, may affect cleanup remedies of our contaminants. MCL 45, pH is the same, we're at the same level. Main basis sampling results, 205 total samples, the levels less than 2.3 ppm, 120 ppm. That's where they range. Of the 205 samples, we range average levels about 20 ppm. Most of the nitrate contamination, most of the high nitrates are in the eastern part of the basin, over in the BPOU area. I showed you guys the BPOU area down around the river. That's where most of it, that's where most of the ag was. Most of the light industry occurred in the central part of the west part. Most of the ag was done in the eastern part of the basin, so that's where we see the higher levels. So that's the story on nitrates. Here's a map that's in your package that shows nitrate contamination. It's kind of a good map. I like it because what we did is we used a legend here that shows the different colors and the different sizes of the little dots there to show concentration. So you can easily see the red is the higher concentration. You can see this is just basically the ballpark alkaline. That's where all the big red dots are, the higher concentration. A little bit out here, one there, but this is where your nitrate concentrations are. So you can immediately see the bigger dots in the red where the higher concentrations are. And that's it.
Okay. Directors, any questions?
Yeah.
Dr. Robertson.
Well, all this concerns me, but the part that concerns me the most is how this impacts, I guess it would be ballpark operable unit, how this affects cycle storage and conjunctive use programs. Have we shielded our spreading ground? Is some of the contamination deep in these areas? How reasonable is it for someone to say, well, we don't want to store any water in your basin because there's a plume?
We're okay, Bill. All of these remedies, the modeling work that was done to develop the remedies were based upon historic basin operations, both pumping and replenishment. So these remedies are designed to develop a capture zone in that area where the operable unit is, designed to develop a capture zone to remove the contaminants based upon historic operations of the basin, including all of our replenishment activities. Okay? So we're good there. The only area that we might have a concern, and we'll be dealing with it going forward, as you know, this district is, Watermaster is, we're all looking at new stormwater capture opportunities, new replenishment opportunities. There are some areas that will require special study. The Olive Pit has always been talked about as a replenishment facility. If we, and the Olive Pit,
The olive pit is, gosh, I can't quite see it, but it's down in this area right here. The ballpark operable unit, you know, it's right in here.
Right.
If we put a lot of water right in here, will it affect the operable unit remedy's effectiveness? It might. It very well might. So both it'll have to be evaluated. But as far as operations right now, our ability to expect stormwater, replenishment water, and operate our bases, we're fine. New opportunities and improving that, we would have to look at impacts.
As a matter of fact, in the late 90s, the upper district studied the idea of using the olive pit. And
yes.
The reason that it was not moved forward was because of the effect that it might have and pushed the ballpark operable unit away from some of the remedies that have been developed.
That's correct.
So, going along that line, what Director Roberts is saying, so can we make a statement that storing water in our basin is not a concern in terms of some of the contaminants?
I would make that, yes.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I would make that, yes. We'll find a solution. We need the water. We'll find a solution that would affect the aquifer.
Absolutely. Every drop of water that's pumped out of this basin for potable use, whether it's used in this basin or outside this basin, drinking water.
Yeah.
So storing water here is not a concern.
Not a concern.
Okay.
Bring us the water.
Mr. Chairman?
Yeah, to wrap up here, an excellent presentation. First, on Director Robinson's point, the modeling is just status modeling, but both Upper District Water Quality Authorities and Water Master have begun an effort in improving the database that supports that modeling work, and we'll be bringing back to your board approval for funding for improving the basin model. We just need to be very smart about how we move forward with that, particularly as it impacts these pollutants. This presentation, I think, gives us an excellent look into the complexity of the water quality challenge within the basin. It has many different facets to it, technical, engineering, and science facets, different at each one of the operable units, a legal facet, a financial facet, both continuing to get cooperating respondents to cooperate, as well as seeking federal and state funding, and the politics of that. My view is that the Water Quality Authority and the Water Master over the years have done an enormous job of pulling this together, and this valley, given the magnitude of the challenge, is 20 years or more in regards to managing the water quality issues ahead of other areas, certainly the San Fernando Basin, possibly with the exception of the Chino Basin, that took great strides forward, largely under Ken's leadership on nitrate removals. So we're in good shape from a water quality standpoint, and the unequivocal statement that we can store water here and extract that water and not have the water quality being issued is important. Also of importance, you know, that this is not just a where we have been presentation. It is forward-looking, and it was Tony and Ken and I's conversations with Steve about what are the potential challenges in the water quality arena and how might they affect Upper District's choices about investments and resources working with the producers and the Water Master moving forward. As an example, Metropolitan Water District or recycled water basically provide us with a reliable insurance policy, and we're going to be renegotiating a purchase order with Metropolitan shortly. So do we factor into that decision about that purchase order, this water quality risk moving forward.
Before we finish, do we have any questions from the audience? Anyone wishing to ask a question of our engineer or Mr. Manning? Okay.
Well, before we move on, John Ranger's comments brought up another question. As you just said, Water Quality Authority and Water Master done a yeoman's job of cleaning up and making progress. I'd like to point out that that was under the current version of the Alhambra judgment without the proposed amendments, which are about ready to go to Department 38 Superior Court. So does anybody want to comment about how those amendments proposals may affect this topic we're talking about?
My response to that, Director Robinson, would be I see nothing but a positive influence on the ability to
manage the future risk of these different water quality issues, largely because those judgment amendments largely focus on financing flexibility for the water master. Gives the water master a greater degree of ability to raise revenue and help deal with some of those issues.
Well, I mean, as you said, they've made great progress under the version of the judgment that exists now. I'm a little skeptical that changes to the judgment may improve the situation.
Fair to truth? Well, I believe, as Shane has just stated, that giving Water Master and just changing some of the things that we've done and agreed to in the Long Beach judgment and some of the things that we're talking about, we have to give our partners, our colleagues in the water industry flexibility to be able to do the things they need to do to be able to make sure that they sustain the water quality and the water quantity of the basin. So I think we're going in the right direction. I really feel that they have done a fantastic job, but they need to be allowed to have the ability to be able to pursue other funding possibilities, and we should be supportive of that, and that's what we've done.
Well, okay. Well, I disagree. I just think it makes it easier for the industry to get into the ratepayers' pocket.
Okay. To stay on topic, we're going to continue with our agenda. If we want to debate this later, we can add it to the agenda. Well, thank you for your presentation. Great job. It's great to know the WQA is making progress.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Anyone wish to remove anything from the consent calendar?
Motion to approve.
Do I have a second?
Second.
All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
See no objections, so moved. Information items are available in our packets on the back. Attorney's report.
Just a brief note on the San Diego Metropolitan case. An interesting development in that the Court of Appeal has decided to accept a writ petition filed by Metropolitan to have the Court of Appeal review the Superior Court decision allowing discovery in this matter. As we've discussed before, that usually when on a rate case, the universe of information that's available for judicial review is what's called the administrative record. In this matter, IID has attempted to go outside that and try and get information into the case that's beyond the administrative record, and the Court of Appeal is going to take a close look at that. So I think that's a good development.
Engineer's report.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'll be real short. You've heard enough of me today, I think. But I will let you know the Fallenberg key well as of March 16th was at 229.2. So it has dropped below the 230 mark, 229.2. It dropped 0.6 feet from the prior week. And this was before we just had this recent rain. We're still at minimum pool up in the canyon, about 18,000 acre feet in storage, but we did have a pretty good rain. I will report, I don't have the rainfall numbers in from this last weekend yet, but I will report that I had 3 inches at my house, because I have a gauge in my backyard, and I had 3 inches at my house, which is really good. So we probably will see some more water up in canyon storage, and we had a good snowpack. Maybe we'll see a change in the State Water Project allocation.
Thank you. Any questions for the engineer?
Yeah, but the problem with the B6, the brine getting in the water, what does the newspaper always find out about these things before we do? I mean, that's always concerning me.
I'm not sure how Bill the newspaper found out about it, but I know that the water company's primary obligation was to County Department of Public Health, and notification to health, and got the health department involved in the notification and the remedy, and then, of course, the notification of the customers, and then health department involved in the clearance of the system, which was done in, maybe 8 or 10 hours. All of that was done. I would imagine they got a link to the Department of Public Health. That would be the way they got it.
Okay. Mr. Chapman, General Manager's report.
Yeah, I just a couple of things to note. On Monday, I will be in Sacramento with Director Bellow and any other directors that wish to attend as far as for the water use annual symposium. And as I mentioned at the last meeting, Clinic California Edison is customer of the year. We'll be receiving an award for water use. Mr. Trejo will be making a presentation there on our direct reuse project. And Peter Rodriguez has arranged for a display of some of the upper districts on outreach materials at that same event. And on Saturday, Marino and I were joined by an outstanding staff and our contractor, Ecotech, at the AGT event at Gabriel High School. And we cleared and gave away 1,000 toilets in the pouring rain. And it continues to just amaze me the public interest in this program at 5 o'clock in the morning when our staff at Ecotech showed up in the rain to start setting up for an 8 a.m. event. There were over 250 people already in line. So, great response, and I want to thank Mr. Ken Chang, who was instrumental in getting us into Gabriel Middle High School and getting us into the gym.
Yep, what in the pouring rain.
Okay, director's comments. I'll go ahead and turn it to Director Trevino.
Yes, thank you, Mr. President. I also want to echo what Shane just said. I really want to thank Frank, Lubin, Elena for doing a tremendous job out there in the pouring rain at Gabriel High School. I want to thank Marco at Ecotech, who did a fantastic job. Ken, man, you were out there at 5:30 in the morning. I mean, by 10:14, we were done. We had all the toilets that had been given away, which I think is a record.
It's amazing.
It's a record. With partners like that, I mean, how can we not be successful? The other thing I want to say is I'm happy to hear that there is not a concern by Ken and Steve regarding storing water in our basin. I think that is the future. I think that's important. I think we need to play a pivotal role in having water stored in this basin and taking opportunities of that tremendous basin we have here, which is a natural reservoir, which is much greater than Diamond Valley Lake and could be a reservoir for emergencies in the future. The other thing that I'm really glad that they talked about, given the fact that a lot of our cities depend on well water, the fact that Water Quality and Water Master are really vigilant in terms of MCL's standards and the impact they will have on our local wells. I think that we're in a really good stead by having people like that and who along with ourselves, who are concerned about the MCLs in our respective wells, since our cities depend on these wells. It's a great relationship, it's a great partnership, and we will continue to work and be vigilant on the wells that the cities depend on for their residents.
Okay.
That's it.
Okay. Director Robinson?
Well, I'm just happy that this item was on the agenda today. We haven't really done it since the Water Quality Authority became a state agency. And I just think that this should become a... item should become sort of
annual. Thank you, Director Thompson. Director Fennell? Okay. I just want to start by recognizing West Covina Mayor Mike Tuohy, South Amani and WQA Board Member Louis Aguinaga, and also our Valley County Water Board members, Mariana Lakes and Lynette Pacheco. Congratulations to staff on another successful event on Saturday. WQA presentation is fantastic. It's an issue that I've had tremendous amount of interest in, and it's good to see to be able to get an update and get a progress. I would agree with Director Robinson that I think we should get an annual update just so the board we know what's going on. We should have periodic, but that's another issue. In regards to the well failure in Baldwin Park, I want staff to be able to speak to our partners and formulate some type of response, an emergency response protocol, so we could be able to be notified and the public notified. Because I know St. Gabriel Water Company was able to notify the customers directly that were affected. I think that was effective. But the Tribune and the paper just said Baldwin Park and the Flint that were affected in general. So there were residents that I know that our customers of Valley County Water District that had this impression that their water was contaminated, that they were not notified, which was not, the correct perception. But there was a miscommunication which the community wasn't notified correctly. So I want some type of system developed with our partners, with private water companies, with all our partners, just so there's a response, information to the public. So I didn't find out through our district, or my capacity as a water board member, I found out through my job. Mm-hmm.
which our office was notified. But I think just, you know, I was seeing, you know, people asking, well, there's a Facebook page and people are putting them all on the actually Consciousness Choose website. Facebook page, they're saying, oh, you know, there's contamination of the water in Baldwin Park. Could you look into this? You know, we don't know what's going on. So just to keep people informed, I think we need to look into this and develop the system. And this could play into larger, there's an earthquake, there's an emergency, a system failure in the water. We just need to be coordinated just to get our public informed and emergency response.
Mr. Chair, pursuing your point, if the response could include a detailed map of the neighborhood, that would put more help. And maybe it did, and the word of mouth just didn't spread that fast, so people that were concerned that didn't need to be. I don't know about the response. I don't live in the room.
Yeah.
But if the response included a detailed map, then the burden is on us to point out who is affected and who is definitely not affected.
Yeah. And also to
depend on the news media you get.
Well, also make sure that the media reports it correctly, and, you know, if there's a mistake, contact them and make sure they know. But with that, go ahead and conclude my comments. Future agenda items, anyone wishing to add anything to the agenda?
Nope.